Welcome to the Financial Literacy Bootcamp, where certified financial planner Dominique Henderson discusses financial topics in plain English for the investing public. Dominique is the owner and founder of BJH Capital Management, LLC, a fee-only registered investment advisory firm offering comprehensive financial planning and wealth management services to entrepreneurs. You can visit them on the web at www.bjh-capital.com or on social media by the hashtag Financial Literacy Bootcamp. Now here's the host of the Financial Literacy Bootcamp, Dominique Henderson.
Welcome to the Financial Literacy Bootcamp. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson, and the Financial Literacy Bootcamp is designed to help the financial services industry to be more relevant, reliable, and respected to those we intend to serve. And we do that each week by describing financial topics in plain English for the investing public. So welcome back. This is episode 47, and today we'll be talking about what you need to know before working with a financial planner. And I'll be using the term financial advisor, financial professional, financial planner interchangeably, because in our industry, we have an alphabet soup of designations and titles. Generally speaking, we use those all interchangeably. And I think probably the most popular, I would say, title is financial advisor for the general public. So I'll try to stay consistent with my vernacular. But today I really wanted to, there's a couple of reasons for this particular episode. The first is, let's start with the mission. The mission of this podcast, what I do on my blog, and really the focus of my firm is really spreading financial literacy so that the cause of financial literacy, so that consumers, potential consumers of financial services, will be informed. And if you work with me, have worked with me, if you know me personally, you know that I do not care if you work with me or not from the standpoint of financial services. My first mission is that you get the information. It may be a great fit that we work together. It may not. I don't have a problem with that. I first and foremost want to get the information out there. So I'll do episodes like this every once in a while, because I think the mission of pushing forward financial literacy and getting people more informed so that the applied knowledge of what they learn here and other places help them make a better informed decision. I like when people do that. So that is kind of one of the impetuses of this particular episode. I've covered different things over a couple of episodes. I know putting the serve back into financial services, episode 10, 9, 10, somewhere around there, covered a little bit of this. And I've also written an article on 5 tips to consider before choosing an advisor. And I've also talked about designation. So I'm really kind of, you know, making a really succinct distribution in this particular podcast to hopefully put all that stuff together. And I was recently giving a talk at a conference, and I went over really my 5 tips to consider, and I was like, you know what, I need to update this because there's some things in here that I'm working in my practice, and I wrote that over a year ago and blah 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 blah. So and there's just a lot going on. I mean, you got the DOL, Department of Labor Fiduciary Rule, and the advisor community is continuing to grow. People coming in, people passing their CFP. There's a lot for a consumer to consume information-wise, and I would love for this to be a final stop or one of a few stops for you to make when you're trying to make a decision, whether you work with us or not. So that's my heart, and so here we go. Rather than invent the wheel, I'm going to be pretty much going off of what I've already kind of written, and I can show you on our website. So if you go to DJH Capital Management, which is up on the screen right now, and you go to more, and then you go to our library, we have some articles here, and I'll pretty much be referencing or going off of this 5 tips to consider before choosing an advisor article. Okay. So just so you know, financial planning, and I think I just have to say this before I get into it, you know, financial planning is not even 50 years old as an industry. It really started, and I'm not the historian here. I'll just tell you what I know. There's people much more versed in this than I. This is not intended to be a history lesson per se, but I have to say financial planning is, you know, less than a century old, and the industry as a whole. And it really began out of, you know, an insurance vein, if you will, with people selling insurance products over different mediums, door-to-door, phone, cold call, yada, yada, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I think that is probably the most familiar prism through which people look at financial advisors as an insurance person. And then, obviously, this expanded to brokerage services like buying and selling of stocks. And so that is another prism through which people look at financial advisors. And so just to kind of illustrate this, I brought my whiteboard back because I like it. You know, the broker, or let's just call it agent, insurance agent for short. You know, those are the two things under which I think most people say when you say financial advisor, they think about those two, you know, job descriptions. And I'm just here to say, although there's not anything inherently wrong with either one of those, because it's individually people that make those jobs good or bad. I know plenty of good insurance agent people, and I know plenty, well, stockbrokers are pretty much dinosaurs and don't exist anymore, but I know plenty of people that work on just that investment side that are great people. So it's not to say that the job itself is bad. It's always the person. But I wanted to expand the definition to something way more, I don't know, useful. It's basically the way to say that. Because what I do as a financial advisor is not either one of those things. And maybe I'm, you know, maybe I'm not the picture of a financial advisor that most people think about. But at the end of the day, this illustration that I have up on the board, you know, your financial plan, and I'm going to talk about that in a little bit, is it's a lot of things. It's all these words that I'm not going to read, of course, but it's all these different things that you have to do. And somebody that myopically concentrates on insurance or myopically concentrates on just buying you stocks or giving you stock picks, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that you're probably not doing yourself the best service by just focusing on those two aspects. So let's kind of get into my rubric for this. And we'll talk, let's talk experience first, right? So let me bring the whiteboard back. I won't be using this the whole presentation, but so your financial advisor or financial planner, let's talk about the first spoke of this wheel, which is going to be experience, right? So experience is a big deal. My time in the industry is going on 20 years, about 19 this fall. I spent the first half of that roughly in the institutional side working for a hedge fund. Then I took some time off to try my hand at real estate, which was largely unsuccessful, bad timing, around 2006, 2007. And then I re-entered on the retail side, and I did that for the better part of a decade, and now I have my own firm. So actual client experience is approaching 10 years in the industry, like I said, 19. I'm not to say that you have to have somebody with all that experience, but I would say at least 5 years, right? Because what you want an advisor is somebody that's seen a broad swath or spectrum of planning situations and problems, and they've conferred with different people. You want that, because otherwise the tendency or the probability of you getting bad advice is going to be higher. That's not to say that I cross every T, dot every I, or neither does every other financial advisor. We're definitely not perfect. But just like a physician that's done 1,000 surgeries or 5,000 surgeries or 10,000 surgeries, they don't make many mistakes because they've done it so many times. It's like practice makes perfect. So you want to go with somebody that I'm going to say at least 5 years. Now, what is this to say for all the different, advisors out there that are just breaking into the industry and don't have 5 years experience? People that I'm into, I tell them, you know, go work with another firm, another planning firm, get the experience, work with clients, understand not only just client planning stuff, but understand psychology and behavior, mindsets, why people do different things with their money. You're going to be a well more equipped financial advisor and practitioner in the field if you do that. Now, that's not to say you have to do that. You don't have to. You can try your hand coming right out the gate, you know, and satisfy the work requirement and experience requirement of any other designation, you know, that's out there, and just try your hand at it. I'll just say, you know, the feedback that I get from clients is obvious that they're looking for somebody with a bit more experience. So when you're looking to work with somebody, I think you should probably look and set the bar for 5 years, okay? Unless you get in the conversation with them and you're really impressed and they answer all the questions right, some of the stuff that I'm going to be talking about. I will say also, in that vein, you want to talk about, you know, the clients they serve. So let's just, outgrowth from this would be services, right? Excuse my handwriting. My whiteboard is not as exact as the PowerPoint, but yeah, you want to look at if they have a specific expertise. Like, for instance, our firm, I have an expertise in executive comp and like stock options and restricted stock and all that kind of stuff, and making sure that we find the best way to lower your taxable income when you're trying to build wealth with those particular types of tools. So employee benefit plans and things like that, I've seen a lot of those, and I could really help you out on making sure you lower your taxable income so that you can build wealth faster. So you want to, you know, you want to find somebody. I know I have colleagues that, like, for instance, they specialize in elder care or college planning, Social Security things. So, you know, all advisors are not the same. Let me go back to the physician example. You may have a knee specialist that knows nothing about brain surgery, right? They're a knee specialist. They do thousands of knee replacements a year. That's how you should be looking at your financial advisor. Ask yourself, what particular pain point do you have? What are you actually trying to accomplish? Are you trying to save for retirement? Are you trying to make sure, like, your goals, your number one, two, and three most important goals to have accomplished in the next whatever years? And maybe you don't know those. Maybe you just want to sit down with somebody to talk through those. So in either case, you'd still want to end up working with somebody that has gone over or had experience with working through that. And you can ask them about, you know, clients that have had problems with, you know, whatever your pain point is and how those things worked out. So all that factors into their experience. Okay. So I think I've said enough about experience. Hopefully that is helpful for you. I think the next thing you want to talk about is whether or not they're a fiduciary. And, you know, fiduciary is this word that comes from basically trust, right? Back in the day, you had a fiduciary that served the best interest of a trust. So if you were to pass and you wanted something to happen that you couldn't control because you passed, you would hire this fiduciary to carry out the mandates, if you will, of whatever you spoke about in that trust. So that's really where that term comes from. And all advisors should be fiduciaries. Sorry, I'm not going to lean towards the other way. And I think my stance here may be an unpopular one with the advisor community that is growing to close to 300,000. Financial advisors or people that wear that title. Here's the problem. At the end of the day, if you don't have somebody, let's just say you're in a boat, right? You and another person, and you each have an oar to row. If they row one way and you row the other way, the boat's going nowhere, right? That's probably the best example I can give. And when somebody's not a fiduciary, that means that they don't have the client's best interest first in mind. They're placing maybe business interest or their own interest. And I know that at the end of the day, we're all humans, but people that adhere to a fiduciary standard are looking to make sure that your interests are placed before theirs. A common example, for instance, when I worked in industry on the institutional side, when we invested for clients and we also invested for our own accounts, the client orders went first. Right. So if we were buying Apple stock at a price of, let's just say 100, whatever, buying Apple stock at 100, and we're buying 10,000 shares, Well, all the client orders got filled at the best levels possible on those 10,000 shares. And if I or any of my other colleagues or employees at that firm wanted to buy Apple, we were last in line, proverbially speaking, to own shares. So that's the concept of a fiduciary, is putting the client's interests first. And I'll just say, and I'm going to get this into another point, this really revolves around compensation, right? Because when somebody is getting paid in a way that has not been disclosed to you or is kind of backdoor arrangement, then you will have what is called conflicts of interest, right? So just be aware of that. You may ask them if they're fiduciary and how exactly their fiduciary capacity works. When you're sitting down interviewing them, I actually got this question the other day. I was talking to a prospective client, and he had read Tony Robbins' book, not the latest one, but Money Masters the Game. And the question he asked me is, are you a fiduciary? He just came right out and said it. And I was like, oh, wow. I didn't say this to him. I was just thinking to myself. I was like, wow, that's interesting. I hardly ever get that question. And I applaud him for knowing that much about the industry to ask that question. A lot of people don't know that. And if you don't know how your advisor is getting paid, I think that's a red flag. It could be that there's nothing underhanded going on, or that they're not receiving compensation other than your payments. However, I would just say that you want to check on that. So I applaud him. I mean, I think that that is a very good question to ask. And a lot of people don't know what their advisor is paid, or not necessarily what they're paid, but how they're paid, right? That's the really big deal, is how they are paid. Are they paid fee only? Are they fee based? Because those are different. Fee based is usually based on the amount of net worth or assets under management that you have with them, and they'll charge you a fee on that. Fee based is, or fee only rather, would be something more along the lines of you get a service plan of some sort, retainer based or otherwise, maybe initial planning fee or project fee, and just that fee is what goes to compensate them. Or they can be commission based, which means that they sell you a product and they get a commission paid to them by the person that manufactures that product or provides that product or service, like an insurance company. So there's tons of different ways, and it can be a combination of all those. But I'll say this, any advisors that you find on NAPFA, so when you look for an advisor through different organizations, for instance, like NAPFA, National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, or FPA, the Financial Planning Association, those ways that they're compensated is delineated there. NAPFA doesn't allow you to be a member unless you're fee only. So they hold people to a much higher standard. I'm actually a member of NAPFA just because I very much my principles are aligned with their principles. So there is for that. Let's talk about, okay, so we talked about fiduciary, we talked about experience. Okay, let's go to compensation. So, and I think I touched on it probably enough, but just look into their methods of compensation. That should be disclosed up front. That should be fully transparent. The prospective client that I was mentioning that said fiduciary, we talked about all that. So let's talk about let's do another outgrowth of services, which really this gets into the planning part. I think that everybody should have a financial plan. And that's not because I sell widgets, which are financial plans. That's not why. I just think that there's not many instances of success or successful people that haven't started with a plan. And my document that I'm referring to, the five tips, talks about investment policy statement. I want to expand this to not just investment policy statement, but a financial plan. So when you come to me and you tell me that you want to retire in 20 years and how do you get there, I need to build you a roadmap to get there. And it's not necessarily that the roadmap per se is not going to have any mistakes or changes to it, because things may happen. But we're committed to the process of getting you to there, right? I've often used the analogy with prospective clients and clients about, if I were to fly from LA to New York or New York to LA, I'm going to have a flight plan. And I'm going to make different adjustments along the way, depending on turbulence and weather and yada, yada, yada. Sometimes it may go smoothly all the way, but sometimes it may not. That's very akin to what I do and other financial planners like myself, in that we make a plan and we're going to make adjustments. So we're committed to the process of adjustments. And that's what you need to be committed to. That's the best way we're going to get to the end goal. There's going to be very few static financial plans that you create on day one that are going to be still relevant on day, you know, 365 sometimes, but, you know, further down the road. So the plan, I think, is a really good thing. And the investment policy statement basically says how your investments should work. The financial plan is really the house in which that sits, right? So let's make this illustration, which is your plan. And then you'll have things in it like an investment policy statement. But the plan is going to cover estate, it's going to cover taxes, it's going to cover investments like the investment policy statement, it's going to cover all the things that are important to you as the client, right? And maybe you don't need college planning right now, or cash flow management, or you don't need any more insurance, but we'll cover it. That's the whole point of being a comprehensive planner. And so those are things that you want to talk about with your planner and ask them if they will be creating a financial plan for you, and in what manner. What does that look like? Can you show me a sample one? You know, those are all good questions to ask them. And I'll say last but not least is just kind of I call it the sniff test. And this is just, it encompasses a couple things. First of all, are you, you know, when you're peppering them with these questions, do they seem like they're trying to intimidate you or control all the information? Because I'll just tell you, having done this for almost 2 decades, the time is going away and has gone away of this not being a collaborative experience, right? There's so much information out there in Google and Investopedia and YouTube and all kinds of things that for a person in my position as a financial advisor, or financial planner, to be trying to withhold information from you and be the keeper of information and intimidate you with the information they know, that's just going away. I mean, I wouldn't even work with a person like that, because a lot of what they're going to do is out there for the general public to see. And that's not to say that we don't do what we do, but as I was explaining to somebody the other day, it's very much so like a specialist, right? There are not too many doctors out there that, although they're, let's use a dentist, that's better. There's not too many dentists out there that work on their own teeth. For a couple of reasons. It would be very hard to do just because of what they do. But more succinctly, when that dentist, or probably more accurately, when that dentist is working on his teeth to kind of save a couple of extra bucks, he's missing out on the clients that he could be working with and earning probably way more than what he's saving, right? Well, same concept for whatever you do. If you are a pharmaceutical salesperson or a real estate person or whatever you do, you trying to create your own financial plan, trust me, you're not going to do it as quickly nor as efficiently as any planner that is worth his or her salt, right? So that's the reason why you use us. That's the reason why, you know, Tony Robbins and a lot of people have talked about you outsourcing the things that you do not do as well. Matter of fact, I think I've talked about that too on a previous podcast. So here's the point. Once they pass the sniff test, you ask them all the questions that they want or that you want, and that they exemplify that they're willing to work with you, not just to get your money, but they're willing to collaborate with you to get you to an experience, to a place of what I like to call financial contentment, so that you can do the things that you love and fulfill your purpose in life. That's what it's all about, right? I mean, why do you wake up in the morning and your feet hit the floor? You want to be freed up to do the things that you want to do, which hopefully are mission and purpose driven. And a financial planner like myself just comes along and facilitates that, really, by you being able to outsource the financing of that particular dream or passion. So that would be, you know, let's wind this up. So experience, whether or not they're the fiduciary, how they're compensated to disclose any or to unveil or reveal any conflicts of interest, their services in writing you a plan, and just the good old sniff test, right? So that's what you can do. Now, I'll put some more resources. There are a couple of different things. I affiliate, obviously, I'm a CFP, a certified financial planner, and they have a website that letsmakeaplan.org that has plenty of good stuff on there. I think I've already posted the 10 questions to ask your professional CFP professional before you get started. I'll put that in the show notes. I'll also put a link to NAPFA, which I reference, the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, and FPA, which I'm a part of both of those organizations. So I'll put all that in the show notes for you to kind of consume. And hopefully that's helpful for you, knowing what you need to know before you start working with somebody. And listen, if you are listening on a Apple-powered device, I would appreciate if you leave us a review on iTunes. Tell us what you like, what you dislike, how it's helping you. You can also visit us on the web at djh-capital.com. djhendersonsr.com is where we'll be posting this podcast and others. You can search for the hashtag Financial Literacy Bootcamp on there. There's different topics and different things there. I'll be hashtagging this with things like financial literacy, financial advisor, things like that. And you can search for other articles that may be helpful to you. You can also give us a call at the office, 214-699-7599, and we'll receive emails at info@djh-capital.com. As always, have a great and prosperous day.